daf ayin, or up to the third line in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Anan Amar Shmuel, Ma'os shel yisomim mutter lahalvosan beribis. If you were entrusted as a guardian to watch the money of orphans, you are permitted to lend out that money with interest. So asks the Gemara, Amar li Rav Nachman, Mishum di yasme ninu safina lehu isura, yasme da achle de lav didu, leiz lu basar shifkayu. The Gemara, so Rav Nachman questions this halacha, and he says that, what, just because they're yisomim, just because they're under bar mitzvah, all of a sudden, we can feed them isurim, we can promote the isur of ribis. The Gemara coins an expression that yisomim that consume money or products that are not theirs are going to follow in the footsteps of their deceased parents. In other words, they're going to die, they're going to be punished for following in, for violating these isurim. So what right do you have as the guardian of the orphan's money to lend it out with interest? The Gemara says, you're right. Amar lei, emali izu, gufa de uvde hechi hava. So Rav Anan asked for some clarification. What exactly happened? What were the circumstances of this case? Amar lei, hahududa divnei mar ukva, da hava be mar Shmuel. The orphans of Mar Ukva had this kettle that they owned. The kettle was entrusted in the possession of Mar Shmuel. Takil v'yohiv lei, takil v'shakil lei. And he would lend out or rent out the kettle in order to, basically make some money for Mar Ukva's orphans. And he would basically weigh the kettle before he rented it out. And then he would again weigh the kettle once it was returned, once the rental period was over. So the Gemara says, shakil agra v'shakil pachsa. But Mar Shmuel would charge the person who was renting out the kettle, he would charge him the actual rent, as well as any deterioration to the kettle. The problem is, agra lo pachsa vi pachsa lo agra, as we already discussed yesterday in the context of a person renting out a boat, that's a violation of ribis. To make the person renting the boat, or the kettle in this case, pay both the rent as well as the wear and tear, the deterioration, seemingly is a violation of ribis. The fact that Mar Shmuel was doing this anyway, that he was charging both the rent and the wear and tear for the kettle, seems to lend credence to the position that we cited, that you're allowed to charge ribis on behalf of the orphan's money. That seems to contradict what we just said a second ago. So the Gemara says, no. Amar lei, ki ha afilu bidekanani nami shari lemiavad. Doha mekable alayu chuscha denechasha, dechama demikle nechasha batzer dame. The Gemara says, you cannot prove to me from here that in general you're allowed to lend the money of orphans who are ketanim with ribis. Normally you're not allowed to do that. The only reason why in this specific instance Mar Shmuel was allowed to charge the guy who was renting the kettle both for the rent as well as for the wear and tear is basically because that was already built into the stipulation. The Gemara says that this would be permissible even for adults, even for gedolim, it would be mutter, because the owners accepted upon themselves that any wear and tear that would happen to the copper of the kettle, because copper deteriorates once you heat it up, if you're going to use the kettle to heat water, it's going to deteriorate. It's almost built into the rental agreement, but it doesn't prove that in general you're allowed to charge interest when you're lending out money that belongs to the yisomim. Then the Gemara says, Amar Rabba Bar Shila Amar Rav Chista, the Amrila Amar Rabba Bar Yosef Bar Chama Amar Rav Sheshes, Maos Shel Yisomim Mutter Lahalvosan Karov L'Schar V'Rachok Lehevsi. The Gemara notes further that one is permitted to take the money of Yisomim and lend it out in such a way that the person borrowing the money, he's entering into this joint business venture, that you're lending out the money in such a way that it's karov l'schar v'rachok l'hefzid. We've discussed this already a little bit earlier in the parak, which basically just means that it's highly probable that the borrower or that the lender rather is going to profit, and there's a very, very small chance that they're going to lose out. The Gemara earlier discussed that normally doing such a thing, it's not ribis d'oraisa to do that, but it's like a vak ribis. It's like a form of ribis derabanan. It doesn't look right because, there's a 95% chance that the lender is going to profit. So normally we don't allow that. However, in this case of the Yisomim, the Gemara says it's okay. So the Gemara clarifies. Tana Rabbanan, karov l'schar v'rachok lehefseid rasha, karov lehefseid v'rachok l'schar chasid, karov lazeh v'lazeh, rachok mizeh u'mizeh, zohi midas kola. The Gemara just points out that normally, again, not in cases involving Yisomim, but just two regular adults. So if you get into a business venture, venture where it's likely the lender will profit and it's very, very unlikely that he's going to lose out. So he's a Rasha for that because he's trying to charge ribbis. He's trying to take advantage of the system. If it's the reverse, the lender is basically disadvantaging himself where he's likely to lose and the borrower is likely to gain, then he's considered to be a pious individual. And if the stakes are basically even, that it's, you know, basically a 50-50 chance that he's going to profit or lose, so that's just normal. That's what the Gemara calls Midas Kol Adam. Then the Gemara says, Amrli Rabba L'Rav Yosef, Hani Zuzei Diyasmi Heichi Avdinalu. What are you supposed to do with money of the Yesomim? If you are entrusted as the guardian, as the steward for money belonging to orphans, how exactly are you supposed to invest that to ensure that they don't quash or lose their entire inheritance? So Amrli, Mosivinan Lehu Beidina, V'yohavinan Lehu Zuza Zuza. So Rav Yosef suggests, let's set up a Bezdin whose job it is to be in charge, to be responsible for the money, and every time the Yesomim need money for whatever reason, they'll give out the amount of money that they require. So the problem is Amar Le V'Hakakal Yakarna. So Rabba turns to Rav Yosef and says that by doing that, you're depleting all of their assets. So he says, no, Amar Le Mar Hechi Oven. So okay, so what's your suggestion? How exactly should we ensure that the Yesomim get the most out of their money? So Amar Le Batkinan Gavra De Isle Dahava Pricha V'Naktinan Dahava Mine V'Yohavinan Lehuni Hale Karov L'Schar V'Rachok Lehafseid Aval Davar Mesuyam Lo Dilma Pikadu Ninu V'Ase Mare Yohiv Simanin V'Shakile. So Rav Yosef comes up with this very, very convoluted suggestion. He says, let's find a guy who has scraps of gold. We'll purchase those scraps of gold. We'll set up some kind of a, some sort of an investment in the scraps of gold in such a way that it's karov l'schar v'rachok l'hav. Said, as we noted earlier, it's likely, it's probable that the Yesomim will benefit. But make sure that the guy you're investing or buying the gold from doesn't have basically whole pieces of gold. It should only be scraps of gold. Why is that distinction significant? Because if he has a whole bar of gold, then it's possible that was given as a pikadon, as a deposit, as a collateral from someone else, and the guy who really owns it can come claim it, and then the Yesomim are going to lose all their money. So you have to find a guy who has scraps of gold, and then you can invest, and that's how the Yesomim are going to keep all their money. The obvious problem is, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Ashim, Tenachi mishtakach gavra de isle dava pricha. Ilo mishtakach gavra de isle dava pricha. Nechlu zuze de asme. Okay, well, that's assuming you can find a guy who has scraps of gold. What if you can't find such a guy? What? So now the Yesomim's money is going to go down the drain? So the Gemara says no. Elo amar Ravashi, chazinam gavra de mishafu nichse umeheman, vishama dina de oraisa, velo mekabel shamta de rabanan, viyahavina luhuni hale bevedina. So not quite as convoluted as the original suggestion. Basically, you find someone who has property. His property is not under contention. There's no one claiming that the land he owns belongs to someone else. He also has to be a trustworthy individual, and he has to be someone who follows the dinim de oraisa and has never been excommunicated by the rabbis. That's the kind of guy you want, someone trustworthy whose assets are in order, who's not under any sort of scrutiny or anything like that. And he's the guy that you want to basically entrust the money of the yesomim to that individual. Okay, says the Mishnah: Ein mekablin son barzel mi Yisrael mipnei shehu ribis avo mekablin. So in Barzel Min Ha'akum. So we alluded to this halacha a little bit yesterday in the Gemara, where the Mishnah tells us that a person is not allowed to enter into a guaranteed investment with a Jew, because that would be a violation of ribbis. A guaranteed investment basically just means that you, as the individual who's receiving the animal or the item, whatever it is that's involved in the transaction, in other words, you are basically fully responsible, fully liable for any loss, any depreciation, any damage to the animal or the item, and you're also only getting half the profits. It's not like you're going to be getting a larger share than the owner. That's called son barzel. That's a quote-unquote guaranteed investment. That would be a violation of ribbis if you entered into such a transaction with a Jew. But to enter into such a transaction with a non-Jew, as we'll talk about on this amud, is not a problem, because as we'll talk about, there is no isser, at least need to oraisa, when it comes to ribbis with a non-Jew. Then the Mishnah says, velovin mehenu malvino son beribbis, v'chein beger toshav. And as we just pointed out, there is no prohibition of ribbis at all when it comes to not only a non-Jew, the Mishnah says, but even a ger toshav. A ger toshav is also a non-Jew, but he lives in Eretz Yisrael and accepts upon himself to observe the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. So there is no prohibition to either borrow money from or lend money to a non-Jew or Ger Toshav with ribbis. And then finally, the Mishnah says, So the Gemara on tomorrow's daf is going to explain this line a little bit more. But basically, what the Mishnah is saying here is that if a Jew is acting as a middleman between a non-Jew, so in other words, let's say for example, Reuven wants to borrow money from a non-Jew, and you are acting as a Jewish middleman. So the Mishnah says that you can lend the non-Jew's money to the Jew with ribbis, provided that it's with the knowledge of the non-Jew, but not if it's with the knowledge of the Jew. Again, the Gemara is going to explain that. Okay, so asks the Gemara, lememra devirishusa de mekabel kaima. So the opening line in the Mishnah that drew a contrast and said that one is not permitted to enter into a quote unquote guaranteed investment with the Jew, meaning to say that you're fully accepting any liability or any depreciation, and you're only getting half the profits. The implication of the Mishnah is that basically the item, the sheep, whatever it is that you're accepting, is going to fully be ensconced in the possession of the one receiving the animal or the item. The problem is Uriminu, Hamekabel Tzon Barzom and Hanachrim Vlados Peturim and Habechora. We have a Mishnah in Meseches Bechoros that seems to contradict this notion, because the Mishnah tells us that if a Jew enters into such an agreement with a non-Jew for an animal, any offspring born from that animal is putter from the laws of Bechora. Now the only way that an animal would be exempt from the laws of Bechora is that the animal does not belong to a Jew. So the Mishnah in Bechoros tells us that if I enter into such an agreement of a guaranteed investment, I'm the one receiving the sheep in this transactionary format from a non-Jew, those offspring are not subject to the laws of Bechora. The only way that could possibly be true is if the non-Jew is still the owner of the animal. But that seems to run contrary to what our Mishnah just said, because we just pointed out that if you enter into a guaranteed investment, you now become the owner of the animal or the item that you're accepting. So the Gemara says, you're right. Amar Abaye, lo kashya, had de mekabel alei unsa vizula, had de lo kabel alei unsa vizula. Abaye says, it depends on the context of the agreement. Meaning, if the non-Jew basically accepted upon himself any sort of damages, any accident, any loss, any depreciation to the animal or the item, so then it's considered to be fully in his possession. If he did not do that, so then it's considered to be in the possession of the one receiving it. So asks the Gemara, Amar le Rava, I de kabel alei mara unsa vizula, So first of all, if the non-Jewish owner is accepting all of these things on himself, that he's going to pay for the depreciation and for the loss and for accidents and whatever else, so how could you call that a guaranteed investment? In other words, the non-Jew is very much saying that I'm going to guarantee, I'm going to back this up if something happens to the animal. So it's almost inaccurate to call this investment a guaranteed, in other words, to call this a guaranteed investment. The ode, adesani seifa, avo mekabun son barzel min ha'akum, liflog bididei, ba men dvar mamurim delo kabila le unsa vizula, Avil Kabil Maro unto the Zula Shapir Dami. Moreover, the Gemara says that we have a textual issue. Even if somehow you wanted to grant that this scenario would still qualify as a guaranteed investment, despite the fact that the non-Jewish owner is accepting upon himself all of the depreciation and loss, etc., still the Mishnah doesn't read straight, because if this distinction that Abaye cited were true, that when the non-Jewish owner accepts upon himself loss and depreciation, so then he's still called the owner, and if not, then the guy who's receiving it is called the owner, the Mishnah should have said that. The Mishnah should have written that distinction, right? It seems like a pretty basic distinction to omit from the Mishnah. So the fact that it was omitted seems to lend credence to the idea that really it goes into the possession of the one receiving it. So the Gemara says, you're right. Elo Amar Rava, Idi v'idi delo kabila le mara unsa vizula, v'gabe b'choros, hainu tam divladus p'turim min ha'b'chora, kevan de ilu yahiv zuzay, Asay Nachri Tafis Lah Livehima, the Ilo Mashkach Livehima, Tafis Lahu Livlados, the Havile Yad Nachri Ba'ansa, the Chol Yad Nachri Ba'ansa, Patrim and Habachora, comes the Gemara and says that really, in both cases, the owner never accepted upon himself to pay for the depreciation, for the loss of the item. Because again, otherwise, it's not really a guaranteed investment. It's the owner who's guaranteeing everything. So what's the difference then in the Mishnah and Bechoros? The difference is basically a quirk in Hilchos Bechora. Namely, if you have a scenario where, let's say, the Jew who received the animal never paid for it or never paid in full, so the non-Jew has the right to step in and take his animal back. That's what the Gemara calls Yad Nachri Ba'emtza, that the non-Jew's hand is still very much involved in this case, in this transaction, because in theory, if the Jew defaults or the Jew never pays back, the non-Jew can come and take the animal back. So anytime the non-Jew, in theory, has a hand where he can basically revoke the entire transaction because the Jew failed to pay, so that animal still fundamentally belongs to the non-Jew and is therefore going to be putter from the laws of Bechora. Okay, then the Gemara sets a pasuk from Mishlei. The pasuk in Mishlei says, "Marbeh huno beneshech v'sarbis lichonein dalim yikbitzenu." The pasuk in Mishlei says that a person who increases their wealth through ribis, through interest, through various illicit increases, they are going to be given over, or they're going to be gathered to the chonein dalim, to those who beseech the poor, or to those who help out the poor. So what does that mean? Ma'ilu chonein dalim? Amar Rav Kigon Shavor Malka. It's an allusion to Shavor Malka. He was a Persian king, and basically he would take money. He would take money from the Jewish people and would use it to sustain the impoverished non-Jews. So that's what the pasuk means. If you gain your money illicitly, it's going to be seized. It's going to be repossessed, and it's going to be given to the non-Jewish paupers. Then the Gemara says, "Amar of Nachman, Amar Lihuna, lo nitzricha ela da'afilu ribis to oved kochavim." So comes the Gemara and says and comments that this pasuk in Mishlei that we just cited is even a reference to the prohibition, to the isser of charging ribbis to non-Jews. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Esive Ravala Ramachman Lanachri Sashich. My tashich, lav tishoch. The problem is we have a pasuk in Parshas Re'eh that seems to say explicitly that there is no prohibition of charging ribbis to a non-Jew. Not only is there no prohibition, the pasuk almost seems to sanction it. The pasuk says la nachris hashich, which the Gemara thinks means that you're allowed to charge interest to a non-Jew. To which the Gemara says lo tashich. The pasuk doesn't mean that you're allowed to charge interest when you're lending money to a non-Jew. It means that you're allowed to pay interest to a non-Jew when you are returning the money that you borrowed from him. To which the Gemara then asks, "Lo sagi de lav achi liafuke achicha." Liafuke achicha de lo. The Gemara says, "Hang on a second. How can you tell me that there's, that we're sanctioning or that we're allowing you to pay interest to a non-Jew? That pasuk is only coming to exclude a Jew. Meaning, as the Mishnah noted in the beginning of this parak, the isser of ribis runs in two directions. Not only can you not lend with interest, you also cannot borrow with interest. And the isser is very much on the loveh as much as on the malveh. So when the pasuk says that, in other words, when the pasuk says la nachris hashich, it's not a mandate, it's not a directive. You must pay back your interest to a non-Jew with ribbis. It's just telling you that you can't do that with a Jew. To which the Gemara then pushes back further. Achicha behedja kasav mei uli achicha lo sashich. In other words, the question then becomes, well, why do I even need a pasuk at all to tell me that it's forbidden to pay back with interest to a Jew? The pasuk also says that explicitly. It says uli achicha lo sashich. You're not allowed to pay back with interest to your brother, to your Jew, to another, to the Jewish brother. So the Gemara says, no, lavor alav ba'aseiv lo sashich. Okay, the Torah is basically throwing multiple punishments, multiple penalties at you. It says that if in fact you, as the borrower, pay a Jew back with interest, you're in violation both of a lav as well as of an aseh. Okay, then the Gemara asks, "Esime lavin mehanu malvin osam beribis v'chein beger toshav." Our Mishnah told us that one is permitted to lend and borrow with interest, both from a non-Jew and from a ger toshav. That seems to again contradict what we just said before, that there's a problem to lend with ribis to a non-Jew. So Amar Rav Chiya b'Rei de Rav Huna lo nitzricha ela b'chdei chayav. So one answer in the Gemara is that, in other words, you're not allowed to on a regular basis lend or pay back money to a non-Jew with ribis. But if let's say once in a while you're in desperate need of money, the only way you're ever gonna make enough money to survive or to get by is if you lend with interest. So in this one circumstance, it would be mutter, but to do so on a regular basis would be problematic. Then the Gemara says, "Ravina Amar Hacha b'Salmidei Chachamim Askinan Taima My Gazer Rabbanan Shema Yilmo Mi Ma'asav V'Chevan D'Salmid Chacham Hu Lo Yilmo Mi Ma'asav." The second answer in the Gemara is that here we're talking about Talmid Chacham. The reason why Chazal made a Takana de Rabbanan that you're not allowed to lend or borrow with interest from a non-Jew is because they were afraid that it was going to spill over to cases involving Jews, that it was going to lead you down the wrong path, and you start to lend with ribbis to Jews. But if you're a Talmud Chacham, the Gemara says that issue is not going to apply. And finally, the Gemara says, "Ika demasne lo lahad Rav Huna ahad the sonny Rav Yosef im kesef talve es ami es he ani imach." Ami v'nachri ami kodem, ani v'asher ani kodem, aniyecha v'aniyeh yerecha aniyecha kodmin, aniyeh yerecha v'aniyeh yeracheres aniyeh yerecha kodmin. So we're going to talk about this a little bit more tomorrow. But basically, the Gemara comments based on the pasuk of Mishpatim in Kesef Talveh Es Ami that there are basically laws of precedence when it comes to lending money. That first you lend money to a Jew over a non-Jew, to a poor person over a wealthy person, to someone who lives in your community versus someone who does, to your own relative versus someone who's not related to you. There are certain laws of precedence which hopefully tomorrow we'll get into some of the details to see what the sources for all of those halachos are.